Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Welcome to Bear and Balance. I'm Jeff Berkus, a writer for Windy City Gridiron, and I'm joined by the editor of that fine website, Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. Lester, the Bears dropped to 2-2 after losing a 20-12 game in the Meadowlands. But other than that, how are you feeling?
Pretty good. You know, it's always better. I watched some of Robert Schmitz's post game. Him and Aaron Lemming did the post game show, and you know, I think you actually had a tweet about it, you know, that we're lucky we have to wait a day, because those are media post game, man. It's just the emotions are so high. And, you know, I mean, I'm still a little annoyed at the game, but it's, you know, it's nowhere near what it would have been. We have a chance to go back, kind of watch the film, listen to the pressers, hear what they all have to say. The injuries kind of at this point are kind of, we know some of the injuries. So it's like, okay, you know, it's a little different perspective, which is why I kind of enjoy the way we do things here.
Yeah, you do have a certain appreciation for it. The emotions can run high, even though, you know, I had low expectations for what this team would look like, and I still get really irritated by some things, and you're still learning about this new coaching staff. You're learning about new players. There are some things that haven't changed since the last regime, or some things that almost feel worse, and you're like, oh no, are we going backwards? Right. And we'll get into some of that stuff, but it's hard to separate yourself in the moment. And then you get a little bit of time and some of that cools off. I'm still not feeling great about things. Like there may be some heat that comes through here because everything's bad in this game.
Yeah.
This is a bad game to talk about. And second viewing did not help things. And it actually made some things worse that I didn't maybe pick up on in quite the same way, but we will apply our categories and we will be as fair as we possibly can be to this ball club.
You know, I did make sure I have something more positive, more uplifting I have in our category. So I always try and make sure we have something, you know, we got to be balanced, you know, I have something here coming up that is a little positive. So at least we have that going for us.
Good. Well, good cop, bad cop this week.
That's okay.
or kind of jerk cop and really bad cop, you know. It's probably what I would be.
But,
all right, well, let's get in. Every show we start off with our trench tribute. This year it's sponsored by our friends at Portillo's. We have some people in the YouTube comments talking about how they have spent part of their gift card already. Very exciting that those are getting out there. Last week's winner should be getting their gift card here in a day or two. So, you know, share with us what your order is when you get it in, and, you know, make sure that you're, you know, tweeting us your meal and all that kind of stuff. If you would like a chance to win a $100 Portillo's gift card, let us know. Give us a comment where you get your Bear and Balanced of who you think your player of the week was. This is a hard one because it was a tough game to pick out a player of the week, but go ahead and do so, and we will put you in the drawing. If that's an email address, it's 2ndcitygridiron@gmail.com. Just hit up the Twitter. We'll have this episode posted. You can make a comment on that. And then if you do comment on the YouTube clip, just make sure you check back to see if you won.
Yes.
Because we've had a couple people win from the YouTube, and then we don't know how to contact them. So it takes a little while. So just kind of check back on that and let us know who your trench tribute is. I believe that it's my turn to go first this week.
You got it.
It's all you. I was very tempted to just say Patrick Scales and just move on. But I think that I at least need to give Justin Jones a little bit of love here. It is very difficult to give any sort of props to a defensive line that gets gashed in the run game like they did. It is even harder to give any love to an offensive line that gave up a pressure rate like they did in this one. But Justin Jones did have a couple of nice plays. He had 2 tackles for loss, 6 tackles overall. There's a stat out there that says he is winning 25% of his pass block reps. Hard to like reconcile that with what we've seen.
That's the pass block win rate in reverse, correct?
Pass block win rate, which is a good number for a defensive tackle. It's a top 10 mark so far this year. And so I think that, you know, this was the consolation, the backup plan to Ogunjobi, right? The signing that didn't work out. They pulled that contract. They gave money to Justin Jones to come in. He's here for a couple of years. I think he's played okay. Like, he's not a world beater, but he did have a couple of nice plays in this one. It's slim pickings along the trenches. The Giants really beat up the Bears along the trenches in this one. Dave Gettleman is somewhere saying, see, I told you so, because the Lions really won this one through the trenches. But that's who I identified. What about you?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned Justin Jones, because one thing I noticed about watching him when I go back and watch the film is he flashes. You know, he's been very inconsistent.
Right.
But the times he has won, you know, he's looked good. Times he has lost, he's looked really bad. Where he's just stuck on blocks. He really does nothing. But, you know, I think he's, you know, he's still – I hate to keep going back to the learning the scheme thing, because he's a defensive lineman. He's, you know, it's his gig. But, you know, he's still – it's he's in a different style than he was in with the Chargers. So, you know, I think he's been a nice pickup for the Bears. He's not, you know, at the same level of Ogunjobi, who I have not watched any film on, I'll admittedly so. But what I did watch from him, you know, previous, he was inconsistent. So Justin Jones kind of has that same vibe going for him, where, you know, he flashes here with a TFL or he gets a pressure, and then the next play he's like a non-factor. But, you know, he had a few tackles this game. I thought he had a nice game. But for me, my trench tribute, I'm going to go with Cody Whitehair again. He wasn't in the game very often, but when he was in there, he was the best offensive lineman. And when he exited, it really was noticeable, because then you had Lucas Patrick, who had to kick over. And I think I tweeted about it, or I thought about tweeting about it. That's tough.
So it exists. If you thought about tweeting about it, it exists, right?
I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if it's out there. So if anyone says, you never said that, it was in my brain at some point. So Lucas Patrick going right guard to left guard.
Uh-huh.
It's he struggled at left guard, you know.
Yeah.
I thought Patrick was okay when he was on the right side. I thought he's been okay. You know, I still think Tevin Jenkins is a much better football player right guard, but Patrick immediately gave up pressure. He looked bad. The difference in Cody Whitehair and Lucas Patrick was really stark. So I got to go Cody Whitehair again. And now we heard today that he's going to be out for some time. Who knows what that is? They'll make a determination on injury reserve later this week. If he does go to IR, that's an automatic 4 games he'll miss. I hope the knee injury is not that severe, because the Bears desperately need their best offensive lineman to be playing.
Why don't we talk about that here a little bit more? So if Whitehair is out for any period of time, it was said today that they're going to go with the line that they put out there, you know, mid-game. So that would be Lucas Patrick playing left guard. You would keep Sam Mustipher at center, and Tevin Jenkins would be your right guard. And I think that what one thing you touched on is they signed Lucas Patrick to be a center.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting guard reps, I think, so that he was getting game shape so that he could come back and slide back into center. He's not a good guard. We don't know. He's not a right guard. I mean, he wasn't terrible, but like, he's not good. He's not like a good plus player. We don't know what he is at center, because we haven't seen him play center for the Bears in the scheme, right? One would believe that he would be better than Sam Mustipher, who had a rough one.
He had a rough one.
He had a rough one.
More on that later.
More on that later. But what's interesting is throwing a guy that you signed to be a center and has been taking reps at right guard, and then putting him at left guard and being like, oh God, and he was terrible. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
It's hard. They're not the same position. I know that people think that it is. Oh, you're playing line. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we talk a lot about how much different it is to play tackle and guard because of just how that relationship is, but flipping side, there's a lot of professional offensive linemen that say that they would much rather kick out to tackle as a guard or slide into guard from a tackle on the same side than they would be to flip sides, particularly if you are a little bit further on in your career because of that muscle memory that you've developed and everything's flipped. And to ask a guy to flip mid-game is a really big ask. And he's not a rookie. Like he's into his career. Yeah. I don't know where he played on the Packers offensive line. I really don't, but he's been practicing on the right. I'm not shocked that he got in first rep yet. He gets absolutely whipped. One, he's going against good competition. And two, it hasn't been practiced. He doesn't have the mental reps. He doesn't have that going. So could this line configuration work? Maybe, but I would much rather see them go with the original plan, put Lucas Patrick in at center when he's able to snap with his thumb fully healed, and put somebody else in at left guard. Whether that's, I don't know where the health is of the rookie, Zach Thomas. I don't know because he got hurt, right?
Zach's on the practice squad.
Didn't look great.
Ja'Tyree Carter is there. He was inactive last week.
Okay.
So Dieter Eisen's playing, another practice squad guy.
Yep. Carter had been playing right guard in camp. You got Leatherwood, who's on the active roster. Don't know what their long-term plans are with him, if they wanted to maybe try to put him in at left guard or something like that. I would rather see that, but clearly that's not where they're thinking. They're trying to duct tape things together here, and I don't think it's the right plan.
Yeah. I think with Leatherwood, I think – you know, everything I've seen, I've talked to guys that are, you know, much more in the know about the college game than I am. You know, they say left guard might be Leatherwood's best because he was a good left tackle in college.
Right.
So he's got that left side muscle memory going. He really struggled in the right side. So once he's cleared from mono and he's able to practice again, if by chance Whitehair's still out, I think that I would like to see Leatherwood get a chance at left guard. It's a worse line. I mean, with Whitehair out, it's going to be worse because, you know, now you have a guy in Pat, like you said, Patrick's left guard. That's not what he was brought in for. Mustafer struggled a bit at center this last week. And, you know, the one positive in all this, Tevin Jenkins now is you're going to be 100% all the reps at right guard. That's the one positive in this whole thing. Other than that, the O-line is worse today than it was last week. And that's not saying much.
Yeah, you took out your one consistent piece. So it's something we'll obviously watch. The Vikings are up next, and that'll be a whole thing. Good luck to Justin. We will get into that. Just keep him upright. Just keep him upright as much as you can. Keep him healthy. Please, we're going to the Commanders game in week 6, the Thursday Nighter. Please keep Justin healthy.
Going to that game. Yeah.
Big time. So let's move on to the tweet of the week. So my tweet this week is from Doug. I don't know how to say this last name. Kayed?
Close enough.
So he says, hashtag Giants defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence had 8 total pressures yesterday against the Bears. That's tied for the most ever in a single game by a defender listed over 320 pounds. Okay, one, what database is Doug searching where he's able to put in the weight of the defensive tackle to come up with this number? I don't know. Two, most defensive tackles weren't 320 pounds for the first, you know, 70 years of the league. So like there is that. It's not like, you know, that much of a stretch, but and I don't know how long they've been tracking pressures, which is the other piece of this. So I don't know how far this goes back. And there's a lot of qualifiers here, like being 320 pounds listed as your like combine weight, or is it like a real weight? Because some of those weights just aren't real. But let's just take this for what it is, that Dexter Lawrence had a really good game.
Hell of a game.
And if you watch the 10-minute drill, little plug, if you watch the 10-minute drill, I said the key matchup for the Bears was Dexter Lawrence against this interior offensive line for the Chicago Bears because he's a really good football player. He does not get talked about nearly enough. Like a lot of the other guys on that defense get oxygen. I don't think he does. He had an absolute stellar game because he's a really good football player, but he took advantage of a pretty tough spot from the Bears. That's a total mismatch against Sam Mustafer. I don't care if he's been playing a little better this year than he had last year. That is a complete mismatch. Lucas Patrick was mismatched against them. The Bears did not have answers for Dexter Lawrence yesterday.
Tevin Jenkins was pretty good against them. I mean, I don't think Tevin Jenkins gave up any pressures in the game, but you mentioned Mustafa, you mentioned Patrick. Those guys got worked. I mean, there was, like you said, the first play with Patrick was terrible. You know, there's clips, you know, when you go back and watch the game, and they're all over Twitter too. I mean, it's, you know, Sam Mustafa had a rough game against him. And, you know, I was not aware of him very, very much, to be honest, before the Giants game. And then I watched the 10-minute drill and you mentioned him. And I'm like, okay, I better keep an eye on this guy. And then, yeah, he is a hell of a football player. He's a physical presence in the air, and he's really good with his hands. I mean, like, so many of the reps that Mustafa lost, even Patrick lost, it's just like they engage and then they just get shucked out of the play immediately. And, you know, it's, we talked about that pass rush win rate earlier in the show. I can't imagine what it's going to be for Mustafa and for Patrick after this week's game.
It's a little bit of a weird victory lap. I don't like to take a victory lap being right about this sort of thing, but it is. It was one of those where it's like, man, I saw this coming.
That's the guy. Away. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to yours. What do you have for the tweet of the week?
Mike Brown. Bears fans all know Mike Brown. You know, of the 2000 Bears at 21MB30. To my Bears fans, I know we want to win them all. We play hard. We're young but feisty. To grow, I think it's a heartfelt process. We got something brewing with heart and efforts. And the cool thing is we got 13 to go. First off, that's a nice perspective there. I mean, it is a young season. The Bears are 2-2. You know, so many fans, we want immediate success from the young players on our team, or otherwise they're busts. You know, you see it all through social media. You see it on the talk shows, sports radio. You know, the NFL story is long from over for guys like Bayless Jones. Rough game. Kyler Gordon, Justin Fields, Braxton Jones, you know, even Matt Eberflus and Luke Getsy, they're early in their careers and their jobs. Long season to go. That's a nice perspective. And then secondly, I just think it's cool that former players like Mike Brown still talk about the Bears in terms of we. You know, it shows that they really, you know, they care, man. I mean, it's, you know, Mike Brown was a Bear for what, 9 years? I mean, you know, yeah. He had some injuries towards the end of his career, but he was a very popular player in Chicago. So I think it's cool that he's, you know, he still has his eyes on his old team.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Brown, in terms of like love from Bears fans, has to be one of the, I mean, this is it's deserved because he produced on the field and he has some really great years. There are some players that Bears fans love that didn't necessarily produce all that much. Then those guys are always funny that we have to come up with a name for those guys, like this like fan favorite kind of player that, you know, is outloved their production, but whatever. Brown was really great. He was just going to stay healthy towards the end there. And because of that, you know, he doesn't get necessarily the love from the national, you know, history books as he should, because he could have had one of those historic careers. That was just his presence and his kind of second nature on the field. But I think that you touched on something that I've been reminding myself, is that when we had, you know, when we were covering Nagy, and it was like, I would say, look, he it looks like the players are responding to his methods.
Yeah.
But he's got some things to work on, right? Like there are things that he needs to see. We need to see if he'll improve on. Like we need to see if he can tie run game with the pass game. Never happened, right? Like there were things that just never happened with him. He didn't grow as a head coach, and that's why he left, right? These guys are not finished products, particularly when you're hiring a first-time head coach. You really don't know what you're getting, and they have to be willing to learn lessons and get better, right? Or otherwise they're not going to be in that job very long. If you're hiring a second-time head coach, you hope that they're going to learn from the lessons that they were given to them during their first tenure, right? Like that's kind of how that works. They just chose to hire Matt Eberflus over a Doug Peterson, who, you know, had a Super Bowl championship and who has gone down to Jacksonville and has instantly added a real adult in the room and has learned a lot from his time in Philadelphia. And that team's playing hard, right? I mean, they're punching above their weight, or they're punching their weight. I don't know. They've got a lot of players and it looks like they've kind of refreshed that organization. So it's a little bit of a gamble when you hire a new head coach. Sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle, you catch Sean McVay and like, oh, you're set up for as long as he wants to do this thing. But then you know, sometimes you have a guy where it might take some time. And when I think that's where we have to keep telling ourselves this, because if I bring my analytical mind to Matt Eberflus's first four games, I'm not happy. Like, yeah. he's not doing things in a way that the math really represents, and he's not playing like an underdog. And that kind of drives me nuts. Like, you are the underdog. You're on the road. Like, please stop kicking 22-yard field goals or whatever the heck it was, right? Go for it. Like, go for it on fourth and two from the four. That is unacceptable for you to not go for it there. But these guys have an opportunity to learn. And if they don't, then they're not going to be here very long. But you have to give them the space for that. So I don't know what you did there. Let's go on to
caught up. I was trying to move some stuff around and I hit click something. I'm like, oh,
you click the wrong button and you mess everything up. All right. Well, let's go to the stats of the week. Caught up in a numbers game. This will be a depressing one, but yes. 183.3, that is the yards per game allowed on the ground by the Chicago Bears defense. That is the worst in the league. And I went back and I looked, okay, what does that mean? It's four games in. That number will come down. They're going to play some teams that aren't very good at running the ball. But then I thought, this is also not a very good team. They could be trailing a lot. So they could be playing teams that were going to put a lot of carries on them. So actually, this is a number I need to kind of care about for a while. I went back and I looked at the last 20 years of the worst team in the league and what they gave up per game. The mean, the average of those 20 teams. So this is the worst team in each year over the last 20 years. The worst team average is 152.8. So that's a lot of yards. Yeah. And there's you know, about half of those teams gave up more yards per game, and about half of those teams gave up fewer yards per game. But 183.3 is well above the worst team out there. Right. So this, we could be talking about one of the worst run defenses in the last two decades. If this continues, there are a couple other teams that are doing poorly as well that aren't that far behind the Bears so far this year, but four games is not nothing. Like, they're going to have some decent games to get that number down. And again, if they're going to be trailing in a lot of games, that means the opposing offense is going to be running the football to try to kill the clock. This could be a number that we have to worry about. And this goes back. The Bears are on this list, by the way. 2013, they had the worst yards per game allowed in run defense as well. So
one of Trestman's years.
I feel like that was a Mel Tucker defense. So, yes, this is something to think about here.
I mean, the Giants are kind of like the Bears. I mean, they have a questionable offense, questionable passing game, but they got a good running game. You know, they want to keep games close, and you know, that's kind of how the game script went yesterday, because that's what they did. They ran Saquon Barkley 30 some odd times. I think he had a career best number there. Just gashed the Bears. I mean, yards after contact, you know, I mean, just, he's such a good football player, and he's all the way back. I mean, the injury was a couple years ago, and with his ACL, it was happened in Chicago, I believe, or against Chicago at least. And man, that's a good football player. And you know, that was my one concern. I mean, I really thought the Bears were going to win this game. I thought they'd do a little better job on Barkley. They didn't. I mean, Barkley did not. Pretty much did his way. And, you know, it wasn't just Barkley. It was like they were too focused on Barkley, which allowed Daniel Jones to do his thing. But we'll get into that.
They were somehow too focused on Barkley, but couldn't stop him.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what about you? What do you got?
I got two numbers this week. It's 41.75%. And 36%. Those are my two numbers. And Brad Spielberger, our guy at PFF_Brad, he tweeted out a graph earlier today, and it showed the Bears were the league's worst in two different categories. One, they allowed a pressure on 41.75% of all their dropbacks. And secondly, their pass catchers are considered either open or wide open on just 36% of their dropbacks. Those are two categories for the passing game that is just awful. I mean, Justin Fields, he has his issues. So we'll talk about those as well. You know, he's not, you know, some of his pocket presence, you know, some of the decisions he makes, but he has no help. His supporting cast has got some issues here. And that goes back to GM Ryan Poles, how he decided to bring in and constructed how he did. I mean, there were some moves he made here, but Ryan Poles' vision was future. You know, he's like, I'm going to get through this one season. But man, if Justin Fields doesn't have any chance, doesn't have any help at all, you know, getting pressured all the time and his guys aren't really ever open, how are you going to judge what you have in the QB1?
Yeah, so there was a play. Let's deal with the offensive line. Okay. So if you're giving up 40% of the time, a quick pressure, like particularly for a guy that wants to try to throw the ball down the field, it's not going to work. Like we know this. And then you see how, I don't want to say jumpy, but how quick he is to react to that and how quick he is to start dropping his eyes. That's not really his fault. That is just survival instinct there. And so I don't know how you can give Justin Fields too much grief about the way that he's handled his pocket presence and bailing out of the pocket. And then if he does stand in there and take a hit, who is he throwing it to? Right? Like that, you know, there's not this open, obvious wide receiver. And there was a play yesterday that kind of got people's attention where, there was Mooney down the seam came pretty wide open when Justin took off. It was a nice scramble. I think it was a first down scramble, but he came wide open down the seam. And if Justin would have been looking to throw the ball still and noticed it, he could have thrown it pretty easily for a score. Yeah, cool. In isolation, in a vacuum, yeah. I agree with you. He could have. He had him open. That play did seem to eventually get Mooney open. But can you blame the guy for seeing green grass, getting away from the rush and saying, I'm going to pick up this first down and not having his eyes downfield when he's been, you know, under constant duress the entire game? Like, no, like it's not working. Whatever happened in the offseason where you thought you could cobble together, a legitimate offensive attack with spare parts and bubble gum and duct tape, it didn't work. It didn't work.
You know, I thought last year he was a little better on the move, keeping his eyes downfield than he has been this year. You know, this year, you know, the pressure rate has just been, I think it's been overwhelming him where that's on his mind. And that's one fear you always have with a young quarterback is, like you hear about it with you draft a guy, if they start seeing ghosts, they start thinking pressure's there when it's not really there. And I don't think he's at that point yet, but if this 40 some odd percent, you know, pressure percentage keeps it up, you know, throughout this whole season, there's a chance that they're going to ruin him.
You might be right. I also think that there may be more of a coaching point to say, hey, if you escape the pocket, like, and it's something, and you see the green grass, take the first, like, because that was not, I'm running right into a linebacker. I think he probably, again, people were complaining, oh, that was a good touchdown. I tweeted it out. I said, yeah, it looked like he flashed open there, but he saw green grass and he got a first down. It was a positive play. It was one of the, you know, it's a first down, you know, getting closer.
That's probably their best play is, you know,
one of their best plays,
yeah,
right?
Get going. Yeah.
And so it's tough to be too critical of him in that situation, because in many ways, that, what if he fires that ball downfield and it's dropped, or it's off target or whatever, like he's taken a sure thing. Sometimes you take the bird in the hand and that's what it looked like to me too. So I don't want to, again, he didn't see it to make that like conscious decision, cause he had already dropped his eyes to run, but I don't think you can be too upset with him for, you know, running the ball for 12 yards or whatever that was.
Yeah.
We'll just get into the Fields report. We've already basically been doing it here. He was 11 for 22. Bad. No touchdowns, no interceptions. Good. 174 yards. Bad for a 2022 quarterback. Good for Justin Fields in 2022.
Best game of the year, right?
Best game so far.
Wow.
Six sacks for 19 yards lost, which means that two of them were like 0 yard sacks, right? Like they were,
I think there were 3 0-yard sacks.
So okay, six sacks sounds like a lot, but it was probably more like three. Seven carries for 52 yards, one fumble lost. So he did have more success on the ground per carry than he's had in some of the other games. Again, the yardage was at least not like, you know, vomit levels that it had been, and he had that one real nice long completion to Mooney But overall, like this, I mean, this ain't going to do it, man. 11 for 22 isn't going to do it. You know, there was a couple balls where it was obvious where like, you need a wide receiver that can get you a bucket, right? Like you need a wide receiver that you can count on, that you can kind of throw it in the general direction. And this is where that Ryan Poles comment comes back into play, where, you know, he had an opportunity to go out and get Amari Cooper really early in his tenure. He didn't do it. I think he probably regrets that every day, because it was a cheap opportunity for him to acquire a steady wide receiver that he could put out there. He maybe could have had the opportunity to acquire a guy like DK Metcalf, who got an extension, or Deebo Samuel, who got an extension. I don't think he probably could have, but like, people are going to talk about that. AJ Brown's probably, like, you know, potentially the guy he could have got, but they wouldn't have been able to outbid the Eagles for this year's capital. So I don't know that he could have gotten anybody else, but it's very clear, as much as I like Darnell Mooney, that he's not the get you a bucket guy. He's not the throw it in his general direction and he's going to make a play. And that's also not Cole Kmet. And so the two guys we thought were going to be one and two in this offense, they're not get you a bucket guys. Certainly Cole Kmet needs to be schemed up, but you know, Mooney, he needs some level of route combination and coverage for him to be able to get open. And it's just hasn't really been there yet this year for that connection. And there is no dominant alpha guy in this wide receiving core.
When you talk about a receiving core, you like to, I heard the analogy, it's like a basketball team. You want guys different shapes and sizes. You know, it's, you know, you with Mooney, he's not your big power forward type. You know, Equanimeous St. Brown is 6'4", 6'5". He's a good physical presence, but he doesn't play to his size when the ball's in the air. We haven't seen that yet. I mean, maybe. I mean, he hasn't had a lot of chances. From what I've seen him in Green Bay, what I watched a little bit of his tape from Notre Dame, he didn't seem like he's that kind of a go up and get it, you know, physical presence kind of guy. There was a play to Dante Pettis in the game the other day where he kind of went up, had a chance at the ball, hit him right in the hands. It would have been a nice catch, but he didn't come down with it. I think if you have a more physical type of presence, someone who's just, you know, who's used to that, they go up and get a kind of guy, that guy makes that play. DK Metcalf makes that play. You know, a guy like AJ Brown makes that play. You know, a guy like Pettis, who is on his, what, fourth team, fifth team, whatever it is, he does not make that play. So that's going to be on the on the list for Ryan Poles this offseason. You know, find a guy that can be a physical presence on the other side of Mooney. I like Mooney. I think Mooney has the skill set to be a very good player. I mean, he showed it a year ago. But like you said, he's a guy that you got to scheme up a little bit. You got to kind of work specific routes with him. I'm wondering why there's not more slants called to Mooney. I mean, he's got that, you know, good release off the line. He's quick. I think there's other things you can do with Mooney. I mean, the deep ball was nice. He has the deep speed, but you need a guy that you can trust that where when things break down, you know, okay, I got this guy one-on-one. Let's just rip it, see what happens. The Bears don't have that guy.
Yeah, DK Metcalf would have been amazing. That would have been kind of the perfect acquisition.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't know how if the Seahawks entertained any offers or anything like that, but that obviously would have been great. Yeah. I think that's why when you hear people starting mock drafts, our friend Jacob Infante, who's obsessed with college football and scouting, already doing, you know, mock drafts. But when people do mock drafts and they start drafting anything other than a wide receiver, I'm like, just stop talking to me. Go back and draft a wide receiver. Like it's so clear that this is where this is heading. I'll throw out the name T. Higgins, one of my favorite players. I don't know if the Bengals can afford to pay, you know, Burrow, Chase, and Higgins long term. Maybe they'd be willing to move on from him. That would be great. I don't know how you're going to get him, but if you can, you do it, because he's one of those guys that can go out and get you a bucket and be that reliable safety valve. So more to talk about there, but I will say that, again, it's a long season, 13 more of these. Hopefully Justin can stay healthy. We can get a full year of film on what he looks like in this offense, and we start to see a little progress, and we can sort of do somewhat of an evaluation from there. Report from the first four games, still not good.
It's a rough first quarter of the season.
Yeah. We're a second quarter team. Whatever. We'll see. All right, let's take a quick break. On the other side of this, we'll get into everybody's favorite segment, the Three Bears.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
All right, Lester, let's get into the Three Bears. So hot, cold, and just right bowls of porridge. I got a text from number one Bears fan, my mom, who was wanting to hand out cold bowls of porridge. And I'm like, yeah, that's the easy part. Like, yeah. You know, I know cold bowl, I could pretty much go anywhere with cold bowl of porridge. But hot bowl of porridge is a little harder for a game like this. And for me, I have to give this to Michael Badgley.
There it is.
The money badger.
That's a terrible nickname.
That's a terrible name. 4 for 4 field goals. This guy signed, I don't know what he was doing last week, if he was eating Cheetos on the couch, or if, you know, if he was running an accounting firm. I have no idea what Michael Badgley was doing last week, but he wasn't playing football. This week he was. He comes in and he hits 4 out of 4 field goal opportunities. Yes, a couple of them were really short because Matt Eberflus doesn't know how to go for fourth down, but like still he was given 4 opportunities. He converted 4 field goals and he sat on the bench and he got a lot of airtime on the broadcast. And when you have a perfect game in a situation where everybody else is having kind of a bad one, I'm going to hand you my hot bowl of porridge. So there you go. Michael Badgley.
Kyra Santos is back. You know, they talked about it today in the press conference. He's back this week. I think Badgley's officially may still be on the practice squad. I can't imagine he'll be there for much longer because, you know, teams are always looking for a kicker, and Badgley, you know, came out and it was not the best conditions. It was the weather was poor. He said 4 for 4. I think Badgley will be around as long as possible, but he won't be here very long.
I mean, is he the greatest kicker in team history at this point? You know, 100% field goal percentage.
I'm going to have to check those numbers. It might be. Yeah, that's pretty good. You know. No, right, what about points you? Though for him. So okay, for me, I actually had him written down just in case, because I wanted to make sure we did talk about it. But I'm gonna go safety Eddie Jackson.
Okay,
third interception now in 4 weeks. He had 9 tackles. He started off the game with a physical presence in the run game right off the bat. There was a one play later where it was the big gaping hole where he kind of came up quickly and he went to the wrong gap, which going to happen. You know, he's not going to be a perfect here, but I thought he had a really good game. He was nice in coverage. Eddie Jackson, man, this is who he's always been. He's always been decent in coverage. He's always a willing tackler. He never was like a physical presence, but I mean, he's coming up and doing what he has to do now. And, you know, we talk about every week, he's bought into the hits philosophy. You know, he really seems like he's enjoying how he's using this defense. And Eddie Jackson, man, he's my he gets the hot bowl this week for me.
Yeah, I thought it was maybe like a just right bowl for me, but it's hard. It's hard, man. It's hard.
It's hard this week. Yeah, right.
So, all right, cold. I think you can literally go anywhere.
That's a rough one.
Luke Getsy for having no gutsy. O-line protection. Take your pick. I mean, just that's a whole unit failure. Wide receivers not converting opportunities, not getting open. run defense getting absolutely gashed. No discipline from the defensive ends on the bootlegs. I mean, zero. We've seen every single team that the Bears have played, their defensive ends are unbelievably disciplined and not biting on anything. And Justin Fields has to make some amazing maneuver to get away from them when he's able to. And to be fair, he's been able to a lot.
But
Daniel Jones somehow becomes like the greatest bootleg quarterback of all time. And you can't stay disciplined and stay home. You can't just fly off the edge and just assume that he's going to bootleg and just knock him out. Like I've never understood that from, this is an old defensive tackle talking. I've never understood the defensive end thing where you just get sucked down. Just go clobber the quarterback. Just like make an assumption.
Yeah.
And if he turns around, he's got the ball, boom. Like just like make the play. Like, so I don't understand what's happening there. You know, Gordon had another rough day. I mean, I think you could give it to pretty much anybody, but I think that for me, if I have to pick just one, I'm going to give it to Luke Getsy, man. Like I am really disappointed with this play calling. You call a run play with a heavy package where you bring in a condensed formation with bigger guys and you run like a running play on like third and two or whatever, and you're not going to go for it on fourth down. Get out of here with that noise. Yeah. Get out of here. Like stop condensing the field, because that means that your running back just does not have a lot of opportunities to be right. You're saying like our guys are going to beat their guys. Do you know who you're going against? This is a team that spent like all their draft picks on defensive linemen and offensive linemen over the last year because of Dave Gettleman. That's all they did is they draft on the line. You don't have that. So you have a weakness and you're going up against the strength and you say, let's just run the ball like it's 1982. Stop it. And then not to go for it on fourth down. No guts. Like, who are you? You are not a very good football team. You're an underdog on the road. Act like it. Go for it on fourth down. Go down swinging. This field goal crap, absolutely just, it's still getting to me. It's a day later, and I'm still upset. So he's going to get the cold bowl porridge, and he's going to eat every last bite of it.
Yeah, that was a play. I think it's the same third and two we're thinking of, where he had a condensed package. And they brought in St. Brown and a motion to kind of lead the play. And then they got nothing there. And it's like, okay, I assume they're going to go for it. No, they didn't go for it on fourth down. It's like you hear on the broadcast all the time. They talk about how the head coach has to let the play caller know, hey, this is four down territory. That guides them on that third down play. I don't know. Is that not happening with the Bears? I mean, are they still trying to figure out what they're going to do here? I can't imagine. I'm sure they know, you know, but I just don't, like you said, I don't like some of the play calls. And then, you know, did you happen to notice in that chat we're in, the Bears chat, Jonathan Wood, our guy from the Bears blog, had a few numbers in there talking about the first down for the first three quarters. I think it's like 50% pass run ratio, which, okay, it's fine. First down is a nice time to take a shot with Ralph. Second down, you know, it was even worse than that. I think they're running the ball like 50 some odd, like 54% of the time on second down. How many second and 10 runs do you got to do to realize this is not going to work? You know, I have never been a fan of the second down run. I mean, if you're going to do something creative, do something tricky, maybe you come with something, you know, jet sweep or end around or a counter, something, you know, different, you know, at least, you know, try and, you know, outflank the defense. Don't just run a traditional inside zone or outside, you know, come on, do something or play action. You know, I mean, everyone at this point knows the Bears are going to run the ball on second and 10. Well, then let's come with a play action. So I don't know. Just, through four games, I was excited for Luke Getsy. You know, now there's some tape. Now there's some trends being shown here. You know, it's not all the monsoon game. Now we have three other games to go by here. So he's got to pick it up. Definitely got to pick it up.
All right. I listed a whole bunch of options for you. Where are you going with your cold bowl?
I had two things written down. One, you know, we kind of touched on them, but for me, I'm going to general the backside contain. That's my general cold bowl. Give it to all those defensive ends. You know, it was bad watching the game live. My rewatch, I was more annoyed because, like, back when I coached, that was always an emphasis. Obviously, you know, I had kids. You know, it's like, you know, your job. This is your job. You come across. That's your job. You know, you're not chasing. If you chase, you're out of the play. Now everything comes back around you to your side. It's your responsibility. And you know what? These guys are professionals. they were all chasing. You know, I'm not just talking to defensive ends, which it's usually in this scheme, it's usually the end. Quinn, Robinson, you know, Gibson, Muhammad, it's usually those guys. But depending on how the look is, sometimes it's a linebacker, sometimes it's a corner or safety up. You know, whoever is there's always someone. Someone always has backs that contain. This is a disciplined gap defense. They all have a gap. Someone always has backside contain. And in this game, 90% of the time, they didn't even care. They would just chase down the line. And then you would see him too. I mean, you would always see the guy like when the boot happens. Oh, no. Right away, it's like then they spin around. You're not going to catch that guy at this point. You know, you're out of the play. I just was so disappointed in the backside contain. It got better in the second half. But even the second half, there were so many times. And then you see the quote from the Giants side of things. The reason why Daniel Jones came out of the game is because he could not run those boots anymore because of his ankle. You know, he was fine. He just was a little hobbled. That's why they wanted to put Taylor in there, because they knew they were going to gash the Bears all day on the backside boot because the Bears just weren't able to stop it. It's pretty pathetic.
Yeah, they clearly saw it on film, and they exploited it, and they kept running it until the Bears stopped it, and they didn't really stop it.
They didn't really stop
it. Right? Like, yeah. I mean, because then they brought, like I said, they brought in Taylor, and then Taylor got knocked out. And then instead of bringing Jones back in for a traditional offense, they said, let's run Wildcat then. We'll just put Saquon Barkley back there. And like, okay, can I ask you a question? Why the hell was Daniel Jones standing out do you not practice a package where you put another, like, someone who's worth anything in that play? Like, why have Daniel Jones out there? You've telegraphed that that's going to be Wildcat. Bring in somebody who isn't just going to stand there on a bum ankle, right? Like, why would you? And he's your starting quarterback. Like, what's it to say that you wouldn't have, you know, like a guy like
a receiver?
Know, why wouldn't Gordon or Vildor just go pop him? You know, just be like, hey, he's the starting quarterback. Go give him line up Brisker on him and say, Brisker, go knock him out. Like, they're going to do that junk.
That's the most meathead thing I ever heard you say right there.
But I don't understand. But as an offensive mind, and if you're going to run that as an extended package, I understand, like, one play, we went into Wildcat and we flex out our quarterback or whatever. But like, he's on a bum ankle and he's your starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, why did you keep it? It was multiple plays where he was split out wide. Why do that? Like, why put him out there for any kind of susceptibility? I did not understand that. I was like, get him out of the game.
At the time, I wasn't sure how bad the ankle was. So I'm thinking, man, if this guy really is hobbled, don't even cover him. And what are they going to do? Throw the ball with him when he's that hobbled? So I was thinking, just send that corner off the edge, you know, just to do something, you know. But, you know, maybe the Bears weren't sure how bad the ankle was. Maybe they weren't sure if it was just kind of a gamesmanship thing, but the Wildcat often looked pretty good for the Giants with Barkley. That's just a good football player. So it was rough to see them just kind of gash the Bears with that stuff with him and Breida.
I could have covered Daniel Jones on those plays.
That's exactly.
All, you know. All right. very hobbled Daniel Jones, because a fully healthy Daniel Jones is a very fast football player. So
he is.
So yeah. I'm making that very clear. Just right, Bowl of Porridge. I am taking the coward's way out again, and I'm going to say Trenton Gill. The guillotine. Five punts. He had a 52.8 yard per punt average. Good game. Like, just a real, like, for a rookie, I don't remember the other game I was watching had a rookie kicker. Kicker kicked it out of bounds, or a rookie punter kicked it out of bounds on a kickoff. It had a couple shanks and then a couple, like, booming punts, like, just super inconsistent. Gill's been really consistent. I don't really think he's had, you know, maybe one bad punt that I can kind of think about. For the most part, he's been good. He's been solid. He's been able to place the ball down inside the 20 when the Bears are close enough for him to be able to do that. You know, he's certainly been backed up a little bit more than you'd like to see as well. But overall, like, I think for a rookie punter, I think he's looked really solid. I think the Bears have to be really happy with what they've gotten out of him, because I know that Pat O'Donnell moved north and just ate cheese curds and now is a good punter. I don't know how that happened. But for the most part, Pat O'Donnell was pretty darn average in Chicago.
Yeah,
and
he's a guy.
What, what you were paying him, it was not really worth it. And so to let him walk was, I think, a good decision. And then to be able to fill that, and I think getting, you know, about average overall and maybe above average with the consistency from Gill, I'm liking what I'm seeing. I think it's been a good pick, and I think he had a good game.
Yeah, I mean, a late round pick. I mean, Gill wasn't even one of the top punters they talked about. There's always a few punters that all the, like the NFL.com, the combine page, you know, that's how the us, you know, normal guys, you know, kind of look at punters, kind of see who they had listed there. He was a guy that was listed, but he was a UDFA guy. There was like, I think, three draftable punters. He wasn't the guy. So when the Bears drafted him, I'm like most fans, why are they drafting this guy? You know, this, you know, I don't know anything about college punters, you know? And then I talked to Jacob. He's like, oh, he's fine. His release is, he has to speed up his release a little bit. Okay, that's fine. That can happen. You know, he didn't have the biggest of legs in college, but it was fine. And, but yeah, I mean, like you, man, I mean, he's so good. He has a nickname now, the Guillotine. So, I mean, that's.
Got to make it go. Got to make it go, guys. Let's go. Got to make a shirt. I got to design a shirt, and we'll get it. Got to get it out there.
We got to get it out there. So for my Just Right, I'm like you did last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. The spirit of the Just Right Bowl is a guy who performs how we expect him to perform. You know, he's not over, not under. He's, yep, I expect this out of this guy. So rookie cornerback Kyler Gordon. He had 5 tackles. He had a forced fumble. Not bad. Not bad numbers. I saw a tweet earlier today. I forget who it was, but it was, he had 26 coverage snaps, 3 targets, only 1 reception allowed for 9 yards. Again, that's pretty good. But he had some missed tackles.
Right.
There were several times when he was just blown up in the run game, just totally washed out of the play, being blocked. You know, couldn't get off his block. Penalized twice. Illegal contact, the DPI. Cost the Bears 45 yards. So he had some good. He had some bad. This is what rookie cornerbacks usually do, you know.
Right.
The Bears had Jalen Johnson a few years back, and he was pretty good for a rookie. He was most corners don't play that good as a rookie. He was second-round pick. I mean, even guys that are first-round pick, they struggled. I see the Lions had a guy that struggled, Okuda, a couple years back. It happens. You know, if you get a rookie cornerback that can come in and be, you know, good from the go, that's not normal. The fact that Gordon, and he's learning 2 positions still, he's still doing the whole inside outside thing, which, you know, I understand is probably your best option at those spots, but I think it's the best thing for the player, given one job to focus on. That's not what the Bears are doing. So the spirit of the Just Right Bowl, he looked like I expect him to look. Ups and downs, struggles, inconsistent. That's Kyler Gordon's season so far.
That's totally fair. I think you're probably right. We're watching the education of Kyler Gordon live, and it's happening, unfortunately, and some pretty negative highlights. But if you give up on corners as rookies, you are doing football wrong. Yeah. Like they have the steepest learning curve in all positions outside of quarterback. Right. Like it's so hard to see guys step in and learn. Like the easiest positions, generally running back, they have to make sure that they pick up pass protection. But even guys that don't have pass protection, they can get in and get carries. Right. The defensive linemen generally have the shortest path because it's a much more of a read and react position, but it gets harder the further out you get. And corners, you know, with those savvy wide receivers, you know, complex coverages that most college defenses never even dreamed of teaching these guys in college. It's definitely going from, you know, the 101 into like a, you know, graduate level course pretty quick. And if you're going to be thrown in on the deep end, you know, it's tough. So makes sense. That's fair. Still got high hopes for Kyler. And this is a guy who, you know, we're all saying like, hey, develop the young guys. This is a guy that's getting developed. May not like what you see, but eventually it's going to be good for him. You got to take your lumps.
These are all good reps for him. Good experience.
Absolutely.
You know, what inside, outside, wherever he's playing, you know, he seems like a guy that learns from his mistakes, you know? So like, you know, when he's trailing a play, when he doesn't, like we saw a couple weeks ago where it seemed like he passed it off. There was no one there to pass it off to. you know, he's still trying to figure out the zone coverages the Bears run, you know, so he'll get there, you know, like a lot of the young guys in the Bears, I'm confident that they'll get to where they got to get to just because you watch the potential they have from college, you know, so he'll get there. It's going to take a while.
Well, let's get out of here. Let's not belabor a loss too much longer. I think this was tough tape to go back and watch. And
yeah.
Fortunately, I'm going to have to pick a player and go back and watch it again so that EJ and I can talk about somebody on Bears Over Beers. I haven't decided yet. I don't know if EJ will let me get away with watching five Trenton Gill punts. I'm just kidding. I won't do the punter. I'll do all four games of Gill and just see how many people never turn back into Bears Over Beers. Schedule back on like normal. We'll have Bears Over Beers Wednesday night. You know, you'll have T Formation Conversation with Mason on Fridays. Mason's got his own show now with Danny Meehan. We'll be doing that, running that on Thursdays, correct?
Thursdays at 5 o'clock Central.
And of course, Bill's show and Taylor's shows are coming out and continuing to add the depth with interviews and focusing on different players, and just been really cool lineup. Really like how everything's coming together. Make sure you're checking out the 10-minute drill. It's quick. We have made the 10 minutes both the last 2 weeks.
Shocking. So, I can't believe it. After the first time, I'm like, man, these guys are never going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you would have lost a lot of money betting against Robert, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to. I've stayed in my lane, but you know, it's tough, man. Robert gets excited and he wants to go fast. But a lot of cool stuff for you. Hopefully, you're getting what you need out of your Bears coverage. Stick with us, man. Like, stick with this team. You know, it is what it is. This is probably more what we expected. We're learning a lot. We're learning things every week. I think that this is. It's at least entertaining from that perspective, even if the product on the field isn't always that. So stick with us. We're having fun. We're happier with us. Till next time, bear down.